From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Governor DeSantis wants lawmakers to come back to Tallahassee before the 2025 session to tackle the matter of unsafe condominiums.
Produce some reforms that are going to be sensible, that are going to continue to support transparency, that will support safety.
Also this week, what's the old saying about blending politics and religion usually being a bad idea? Florida's present abortion debate runs counter to that wisdom.
They can do ballot measure advocacy because churches and other nonprofits can have very strong opinions.
We'll also hear how a Florida couple turned their devastating loss into a campaign to keep others from having to endure the same kind of pain. And we'll learn more about the state constitutional amendments facing Florida voters this electoral cycle. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report. The rising cost of insurance and inspection fees in Florida have led some condo owners to sell their homes or to move out of state. As Adrian Andrews reports, Governor Ron DeSantis wants lawmakers to step in to address what he calls a condominium crisis.
DeSantis is hopeful the Florida legislature will convene in Tallahassee for a special session within the next few months. Why the rush? Well, Florida's condominium market has gone belly up in recent years.
I'm a condo owner in Miami-Dade, and we have been impacted by the increase.
Doris Gonzalez of Miami-Dade says she used to pay $900 for her HOA or homeowner association fees, then it increased in 2019 after the property underwent renovations. She now pays $1,300 plus other assessment fees. Once she's done paying for her unit, she would have spent $50,000 in property fees.
In addition to the special assessment, which is average $50,000 per unit, so it's like $450 for our unit for 15 years.
In response to the deadly Surfside condo collapse that happened 3 years ago, Florida lawmakers passed a bill in 2022 that required condo associations to complete regular safety inspections. Additionally, owners are tasked with setting aside reserve accounts for emergency repairs. Governor DeSantis said the changes were necessary to get older buildings up to code and prevent another condo collapse. Debbie Reinhardt, the CEO of Resource Property Management in Seminole, Florida, agrees with those moves, but thinks more can be done to assure people can afford the repairs.
How are we going to handle what needs to be done to make sure that these buildings are safe? But on top of that, facing these mandated structural integrity reserves implementation at the same time.
To help lessen the impact, DeSantis is now calling on lawmakers to come up with a plan that would better serve property owners and protect their pockets.
The path forward would be by the end of the year, generating the ideas that the legislature can then take, run with, and produce some reforms that are going to be sensible, that are going to continue to support transparency, that will support safety.
During a recent roundtable discussion with homeowner associations, DeSantis floated the idea of offering condo owners a 0% interest loan to help pay for their repairs. He also recommended the legislature extend the law's compliance deadline past December 31st.
I know the legislators have been getting a lot of feedback from their constituents, and that's what they're elected to do, to take that feedback and then to figure out what policies make sense to be able to deliver the types of reforms that are gonna help people.
Florida House Democrats appear to be on board with the governor's request for a special session. However, Senate President Kathleen Pasadomo in August was against the idea. In a memo to state senators, the Republican wrote that the discussion on condo reforms should be held during next year's regular session, which starts in March. In an interview with the Florida Channel, she doubled down on her stance. She says it's about putting public safety over convenience.
We can take a look at it. I don't know what changes could be made because we have to prioritize public safety over convenience. Over finances.
Governor DeSantis says he'll continue traveling to different parts of the state to hear from condo owners about their issues and to brainstorm potential solutions. I'm Adrian Andrews.
The debate over access to abortion has long played out in religious institutions, but as Floridians prepare to vote in November on a constitutional amendment that would protect abortion access up to the point of viability, some question whether the line between what's religious speech and what's political has started to blur. We get more on that story from Regan McCarthy.
Please welcome to City Church Governor Ron DeSantis.
Earlier this month, Governor Ron DeSantis spoke at Tallahassee's City Church, where he asked members of the audience to vote no on Florida's proposed abortion amendment. DeSantis says he believes in what he calls the sanctity of life, and he says protecting that is something he thinks goes back to the founding fathers.
If you go back to how our founders founded this country, they wrote a Declaration of Independence that said we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, beginning with the right to life. And so that was the insight that America was founded upon, that we're not just, you know, randomly scattered protoplasm that just here, but that there's actually a plan and a higher power.
Attorney General Ashley Moody has also looked to religious institutions for help in opposing the amendment. Her invitation to community and faith leaders to a call to discuss the amendment is mentioned in a lawsuit that alleges DeSantis and other members of his administration are using their offices to interfere with the vote. The Supreme Court has agreed to expedite a hearing in the case, and comments about a video of DeSantis's appearance at City Church question whether such actions put the church's tax exemption at risk.
This is where campaign finance law, tax law, and the First Amendment intersect. So buckle up.
Chara Torres-Spellacy is a professor at Stetson University College of Law and a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. She says in tax law, charitable organizations, including churches, are considered 501c3s.
And those entities are not allowed to intervene in partisan politics, full stop. And part of this is because donations to 501c3s give the donor a tax deduction. And so going back to 1954, we have the Johnson Amendment that says we're not going to subsidize politics. We're not going to have our charities be able to get that, give their donors that tax deduction if the charities are involved in politics.
But what does being involved in politics mean? In this case, Torres-Spellacy says the prohibition is specifically about partisan politics.
So think of electing almost any candidate. Charities, including churches, are not allowed to intervene in those partisan races. They can do ballot measure advocacy because churches and other nonprofits can have very strong opinions about things that are on the ballot. So when they're doing advocacy around ballot measures, that is not covered by the Johnson Amendment.
So Torres-Spellacy says that means there's nothing in the law that prevents churches from hosting a discussion about a ballot measure or even hanging a banner in support or opposition of one of the proposed amendments. Stephanie Posner, who works with Temple Israel in Tallahassee, says for some, activism is a part of Reform Judaism.
We have in the Reform Movement an organization called the Religious Action Center, the RAC, and then they sort of help us decide what causes are important from a personal freedom standpoint.
Posner says the Florida RAC has come out in support of the state's proposed amendment to protect abortion access. She says Jewish law teaches that life begins at birth. But she also says for her, abortion access is really a medical issue, not a religious one. Posner points out not everyone in her congregation, and certainly not every Jewish person, agrees on the issue. She says that's why you won't see a banner, either for or against the amendment, hanging outside her temple. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Coming up on Capitol Report, this is Suicide Prevention Month. We'll speak with a family that's using its own tragic loss as a way to reach and help others.
Our mission is to transform the way people communicate and connect about mental health.
Florida voters will have a chance in November to reduce their property taxes, but only if inflation goes up.
Do you think the counties and the cities need the additional money, or do you think homeowners need the additional money?
And we'll follow the inspiring adventures of some very aware kids.
It was a really cool experience. It was one of the uniquest places I've ever been to.
A note to our listeners, this next story covers the topics of suicide and loss. Chris and Martha Thomas are busy in September. It's Suicide Prevention Month. They lost their daughter Ella to suicide 6.5 years ago. Now they teach others how to recognize the signs. As Margie Menzel reports, it's part of an effort to keep other families from experiencing an unimaginable loss.
To see a picture of the Thomases before Ella died is to believe in a happy family. Her smile was radiant. Her parents, Chris and Martha Thomas, say she adored her younger brother Solomon, who now plays for the New York Jets.
Well, like Chris says, suicide is indiscriminate, but Ella was sexually assaulted at the University of Arkansas and did not talk to us about it for quite some time. She was so ashamed. Everything started to unravel for her.
After Ella's death, Martha says it felt like she was in a different world.
When our daughter died, people didn't want to talk to us about it. Like, people became visibly uncomfortable if we said her name, and we wouldn't stop.
The Thomases began to work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Through Solomon's advocacy in the NFL, other partnerships grew. Recently, the two presented at the Florida Behavioral Health Association conference. But Chris says that at first, he and Martha couldn't accept the idea that suicide can be prevented.
Because our thought was, well, why didn't we prevent Ella from dying? But the reality is, with the right therapy, training, the right resources, people can survive. And when you understand why people are dying, because they're in pain, they're lonely, they're isolated, there are significant changes in behavior, then we can start, you know, addressing it and helping save lives. So our mission is to transform the way people communicate and connect about mental health.
Communication can be a big part of helping people who are thinking about suicide. Jonathan Gomez is the 988 program coordinator at 211 Big Bend. That's a suicide hotline that anyone can call or text to be connected with someone who can help. It's confidential and free. Gomez says his job is listening to people who need someone to listen.
So many people have brought these things up to their family, to their friends, coworkers, and are just told things like, oh, get over it, it's not that bad, or that's nothing, you should see what happened to me. So at minimum, people know that when they reach out to us, they're going to get somebody who's going to respect the experiences that they're having. We recognize that crisis is something that's self-defined.
Gomez says it's rare that someone is reaching out because of suicidal ideation without some underlying reason.
Some mental health condition, a traumatic experience, if they recently lost someone, if they were recently sexually assaulted, if it's a domestic violence situation. So there's a lot of things that go hand in hand, like substance use that can sometimes, it's not a predictor for suicidal ideation, but they do go hand in hand sometimes.
Chris and Martha Thomas are still struggling with that question, but they're trying to turn their loss into someone else's gain.
I saw this Maya Angelou quote this morning. Forgive yourself for not knowing what you didn't know before you learned it. You know, and that's, we try to most days be able to do that, but it's also what motivates us to help other people learn. So, they know more what to do than we did.
A study from Pew published earlier this year shows a rise in suicide among young Black people, like Ella. Overall rates of suicide among people ages 10 to 19 are trending down. If you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. I'm Margie Menzel.
Come November, Florida voters will decide which way to go on 6 proposed amendments to the state constitution. One hasn't been talked about much. Amendment 5 would tie one of Florida's homestead tax exemptions to inflation. Lillian Hernandez-Caraballo reports.
It's a late Sunday afternoon in Melbourne, and Mike Hardiman is sitting on his front porch just off O'Galley Boulevard. It's hot and humid out, but the clinking of his American flag against a flagpole signals a light breeze. Hardiman tells me he and his wife have lived in this house for about 25 years, and recently they felt the pressure of increasing costs.
Well, I told my wife, I said, we're going to have to leave. I said, taxes are going to get so expensive here that we're not going to be able to live here.
Brevard County online records dating back to 2005 show that Hardiman's property taxes are the highest they've been in 10 years.
It's crazy the amount of money that you have to be making just to get by because the prices are so much, let alone taxes.
Property taxes that municipalities need to help fund basic public services like road maintenance, water management, and first responders. But in Florida, people who live in the homes they own get two tax breaks called homestead exemptions. The first one is a $25,000 exemption on the taxes that help pay for schools. The second is an additional $25,000 exemption, but this one doesn't impact schools. Together, these make for a $50,000 discount off the assessed value of your home. But if passed, Amendment 5 could allow for a larger tax break by tying the second exemption to annual inflation. University of Central Florida political scientist Aubrey Jewett explains.
If you vote yes on this and it passes, it potentially is going to mean that homeowners pay slightly less in property taxes each year because the value of the homestead exemption will go up as inflation goes up.
And a no vote
just means that second $25,000 is going to stay $25,000 no matter what inflation does in the future. So you'll still have an exemption. It just won't be worth as much over time.
Supporters and critics of the proposed amendment are split down party lines. Republicans like State Senator Debbie Mayfield of Brevard County say vote yes, holding that homeowners need a break from unhinged inflation costs.
The bottom line is, do you think the counties and the cities need the additional money, or do you think homeowners need the additional money so that they can continue to put food on the table for their kids?
But some Democrats and local leaders say they're concerned that municipalities will need to make up for that missing revenue. State Senator Geraldine Thompson says local governments might resort to raising millage rates to cover the shortfall.
If there is an increase in taxes, it's going to impact everyone, including renters who would not benefit from homestead exemptions. So that is a point that people really need to understand.
Jewett says other amendments have stolen the spotlight, so voters might not yet fully grasp or even know about Amendment 5.
It's not as like sexy or whatever as abortion rights and recreational marijuana, but it could impact the fairness of the tax system. It could impact the ability of some property owners to keep their home. It could impact city and county services.
Back on Hardiman's front porch, he admits he still needs to do a lot of research before deciding which way to go on this amendment.
We should know a lot more of what we are actually voting for, because I don't want to commit to something that I don't know nothing about.
In order to pass, the amendment will need at least 60% of the vote. I'm Lillian Hernandez-Caraballo in Orlando.
A proposal on the November ballot will let voters decide whether school board races should be partisan. On the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast from the News Service of Florida, South Florida Sun Sentinel opinion editor Steve Bosquet discussed how school board races have evolved and what voters might decide in the fall. Here's an excerpt.
There's a constitutional amendment, a proposed constitutional amendment that would make school board races partisan. Now, Governor DeSantis had appointed a number of school board members to the Broward County School Board. How did those primaries turn out? What's shaping up in the school board races there? And what do you think about that amendment?
Yes. Well, first on the amendment, the Sun Sentinel has editorialized against it. There's already way too much partisan politics in school board races. School board races are evolving into county commission and legislative type races, excessively partisan, outside money, candidates creating political action committees, all the things that have really poisoned the politics of this state, in my opinion. What happened in Broward was two of the Ron DeSantis appointees to the school board ran and were annihilated by really good Democratic candidates. I'm talking about Tori Alston and a guy named Daniel Fogenholy.
Who then got immediately appointed to the State Board of Education. So he got a promotion.
He did. Ron DeSantis cannot resist sticking a thumb in the eye of voters in Broward County.
But, he hates Broward County Democrats.
But the voters stood up, and we said so editorially. The voters stood up, and the voters sent a message to DeSantis that we, the voters of Broward County, we're going to decide who's on the school board, not you. Had Alston or Fogenholy won, it would have been a catastrophic political defeat for the Democrats in Broward County. But both those candidates, the voters who are voting in a primary in Broward, know what's at stake. So, but what you have now, though, is Ron DeSantis trying to influence the outcome of school board races. You have Moms for Liberty endorsing candidates in local school board races that used to be determined by the PTA and the student advisory councils at schools and things like that. And, they've gotten more political. I have a hunch that the partisan school board race amendment is going, if I had to predict, I'd say it's going to pass. It needs 60% of the vote. Mm-hmm. And if it passes, you're going to have people running for school board with Donald Trump's endorsement and, with the AFL-CIO seal of approval, things that don't have really anything to do with public education. And so, just about every office in the state is already partisan. Enough already,
yeah.
I mean, so that's why, yeah.
No, I feel the same way. I guess the idea that schools are sacred and like hands off the schools, that's an old passé maybe thought. Everything is partisan. Everything is tribal now. Everything is tribal.
Yeah, one last point about this.
Sure.
And that is, if you keep school board races nonpartisan, then you leave the door open for lack of a better description, but your listeners will know what I mean, a PTA mom.
Yeah.
A soccer mom feels like, I think I can get elected to the school board.
Yeah,
a real person, as opposed to a career politician.
Yeah.
And if we go to partisan school board elections, in my opinion, in my prediction, we will accelerate dramatically the role of a school board seat to be a stepping stone to, I'm going to be on the school board for 2 years, then I'm going to run for Congress.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm on the school board, I will build a record that'll make me a plausible congressional candidate.
Right.
That's bad for the system. That's not good for the system.
Yeah, so. There'll be a lot of ideological...
right. Culture war kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Chest thumping.
Yep.
That was South Florida Sun Sentinel opinion editor Steve Bosquet on the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast. You can hear the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. Florida's unemployment rate remained at 3.3% in August as retirements continued to outpace efforts to grow the labor force. Numbers released today by the Florida Department of Commerce show the unemployment rate now unchanged for the past 5 months. The size of the labor force was down slightly in August, while the number of people out of work ticked up. The national unemployment rate is 4.2%. Governor Ron DeSantis said Florida's labor market remains strong.
The reality is people have viewed Florida as a place where they could have a high quality of life. And so we've seen people move from the West Coast, the Northeast, the Midwest, you name it, to Florida for a variety of different reasons.
The state's labor force in August totaled just over 11 million people. That was down 12,000 from July. Meanwhile, the state had 368,000 people qualified as out of work in July. That was a slight increase from the month before. You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, school children from across oceans worked on saving the planet together this week. That's true in Florida, where state leaders have banned the use of the term climate change in state energy policy. As WUSF's Jessica Mazaros reports, about 30 elementary school kids from the Cayman Islands traveled to meet with students in St. Petersburg.
The children were inspired to connect because of conservationist Jane Goodall. She held a youth environmental summit this past weekend and spoke at Tropicana Field.
All around the world, there are young people like you making a difference.
The summit was coordinated by her Roots and Shoots Youth Program and other Tampa area organizations. 11-year-old Simon Rivers Jr. says he got a lot out of Goodall's speech.
She has now inspired me to go and do beach cleanups more often, to go and spread awareness throughout my home country and keep our environment clean and healthy for the sea life, forest life, and just life in general.
Rivers is a student of Sir John A. Cumber Primary School in the Cayman Islands. He and his peers visited IndyEd, a small private nonprofit school in St. Petersburg, this past Monday to carry on a collaboration that they started a year ago. Rivers says he's already made a new friend. They bonded quickly over their love of panthers and sports.
We're going to contact each other through email. It's going to be very fun.
The group of kids from both schools brainstormed environmental project ideas.
What if we stop deforestation?
Yes, I like stopping deforestation, almost like reforesting, like Clementine's idea. I love the way that you all are building on each other's ideas.
A shared passion for protecting sea turtles first brought the schools together. Earlier this year, the IndyEd students held a sea turtle event on the St. Pete Pier to raise awareness about the endangered reptiles. They're battling a reduction in their habitat and plastic and light pollution.
Turtles are like a natural treasure in the Cayman Islands.
Twanda Houghton teaches at Sir John A. Cumber. She says this partnership is a great opportunity.
It allows students to explore more and learn about different culture and to understand that you don't have to be in a classroom to learn something. The wider world is there for them to learn from.
Back in May, the tables were turned. Six children from the St. Petersburg School got to visit Grand Cayman Island. 12-year-old Eva Spytek went on that trip.
It was a really cool experience. It was one of the uniquest places I've ever been to.
She and the other kids fed stingrays, swam in bioluminescent water, and of course stopped by the Sea Turtle Center there.
It was really nice to meet the people, and like I learned all about their island, the national foods, the birds, and I learned more about sea turtles.
Rachel Pathay is a teacher at IndyEd in St. Pete and leads the school's Roots and Shoots chapter. Jane Goodall created Roots and Shoots to support children and their environmental projects with small grants. Pathay says working with the Cayman School helps the children build relationships and accomplish more.
A partnership like this can take ideas and fine-tune them in a way that we would have not had the opportunity if we didn't have perspectives from different places in the world.
And some of the children are already thinking about how these ideas will influence their future lives. 10-year-old Jonte Jennings of the Cayman Islands says he wants to start his own business one day.
To help clean beaches in the Caribbean, to help the plastic pollution and the sea life that is endangered.
The teachers hope their students walk away from this experience with the notion that they can take action, that they're not too young to be agents of change. The group session ended with all the children reading a pledge in unison.
I love myself. I matter. I pledge to become a positive leader and my best self.
Woo! I'm Jessica Mazaros in St. Petersburg.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Nancy Guan, Lillian Hernandez Caballo, Dara Kam, and Jessica Mazaros. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.